You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
How would you like to go to the movies tonight, Mom? It's cool there.
Welcome to episode 196 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenow, and thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by Roger Wister from the Roadhouse Minute to discuss a 1987 film that does the Karate Kid thing, but moves it to the world of surfing. Starring Matt Adler, Gregory Harrison, and Nia Peeples, directed by William Phelps, it's North Shore. But first...
While Phil and his friends ate, a boy ran past their table. You shouldn't run in the lunchroom. Only
the Forgotten Filmcast
would do that.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat. The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're happy to announce that we've installed Burns-O-Matic in-car heaters for your comfort and pleasure. When you receive your heater, you'll find it very easy to place in your car. Just roll down your front window and rest the heater's bracket on the window with the cylinder on the outside of the car. Roll up your window securely as far as it will go to hold the heater firmly in position. For maximum results, tilt the face of the heater towards the windshield and sit back and enjoy the show in healthful comfort. With these modern, safe, efficient in-car heaters, this drive-in theater will now remain open all year round. If you have any further questions about your Burns-O-Matic in-car heater, please contact one of our theater attendants. And remember, this drive-in theater will now remain open all year round, regardless of the weather.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement, something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
We'll take it.
What started as a simple crime, the candy snatchers. For them, it was a new beginning. For her, it was the beginning of the end. Three losers who wanted to lead the good life. The candy snatchers. They'd do anything to get there.
Jack! Oh,
please don't put me back in the hole!
The candy snatchers. They were rough on candy. They were rougher on themselves.
Get out of my way! Get out of my way! Get out of my way!
No!
Candy snatchers. They were after a fortune in diamonds.
We cut off her ear.
And they sent her father a piece of candy in a box.
Oh my God, no!
The candy snatchers. They did things they couldn't even believe themselves.
That is sick. That is really sick. She is old enough to be your mother.
Do you know these are?
The candy snatchers. Bizarre, incredible, almost unbelievable. The candy snatchers. This is the one they're talking about.
And now, on with the show.
All right, you've learned the waves. Time to learn about a board.
I want to ride this one.
You are not ready for a board like that.
Well, when I am, will you let me use it?
When you're ready, but only after you've mastered all the others.
Starting with this one. Give me a hand. This isn't a surfboard, it's an antique. What's it weigh, 100 pounds?
130. It's made from koa wood, same way the ancient Hawaiians made them.
So it's a canoe. And it's impossible to turn it. It doesn't even have a fin.
Yes, it does.
Hey! Whoa!
There's your fin. You're inside the foot. You drag it in the water.
There's one.
Go for it.
Okay, our movie this time is North Shore from 1987, and joining me to discuss this film is Roger Wistar from the Roadhouse Minute. Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Todd. This week for the Forgotten Filmcast, I watched a really cheesy 80s movie about a young man who's dropped into an unfamiliar community and doesn't know how to fit in, but he meets a friendly misfit named Turtle and is taken in by a kind man in his family. The system is working against him, so he uses his particular set of skills to ultimately triumph in the end. But enough about Daryl. Let's talk about North Shore.
Yes. Yes, we talked about Daryl last time, and it's amazing how this film just coincidentally has a bunch of things that are right along the same lines as Daryl. We'll get into that more, I am sure. So, but before we get on with that, for the folks that were not with us when we talked about Daryl, please tell us all about who you are and what you do.
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess in my day job, I teach math and computer science here at a boarding school in New England. But in the podcast universe, you mentioned I've done a Movies by Minute podcast about Roadhouse. And I have to say I feel a little wistful. We're recording this on August 24th. Yesterday, amazing professional wrestler Terry Funk, who plays Morgan in Roadhouse, passed away. So shout out to him. But I've also worked on Speed Movie Minute with my co-host Bentley Michaels, and a couple of other things. So, you know, I guess I would say I've done a lot of podcasts that have been listened to by very few people.
That's all right. That's all right.
It's a labor of love.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, and I know with Roadhouse, well, and with Speed 2, you've made it through the whole movie on those. And I think on Roadhouse, you've kind of gone into some related stuff. So, you know, talking about some movies that, you know, some of the cast members from Roadhouse were also in, you know, yes, the lesser stuff, I guess.
We have extensively explored the Roadhouse cinematic universe, which is good because we watched a movie when we were getting into our Kelly Lynch phase. We watched a movie called Drugstore Cowboy, and I feel like that has that really has sort of calibrated my appreciation of movie quality, and that's going to help me a lot when we review North Shore tonight.
Well, and like I know some of the ones you've covered there, like I know you did Tombstone, which Tombstone is just. I love Tombstone.
Tombstone is amazing.
It's a wonderful movie. And you know, of course, Sam Elliott is the common denominator there. So every time I watch Tombstone, it's such a thrill. It's one of those movies that sucks me in. I can't stop watching it. I love just how full the movie is. You know, like when I think about all the people that are in Tombstone, it blows me away.
Man, this movie could have really used a Sam Elliott. Can you imagine how much better this movie would have been if Sam Elliott had played the kindly soul surfing mentor? Oh, what a movie that would have been.
I wonder if Sam Elliott, I mean, he doesn't strike me as the surfing type, but I suppose, you know, maybe he could do that type of thing. I know he was in a movie in the 70s that was called Lifeguard, where he played a lifeguard, you know, so maybe he did some surfing as well. I don't know.
He can do anything. That would give this movie one person in the cast that I recognize.
I recognized a few, but yeah, we'll get to that. I got to ask you, though, when it comes to Speed, because you did the Speed Movie Minute. And I know last time you were on the show, we were talking about Roadhouse, and I asked about, you know, Roadhouse 2 being a possibility for you. I haven't actually watched Roadhouse 2, but I don't know. But, of course, there is a sequel to Speed. Are you going to give the movie-by-minute treatment to Speed 2?
We're not going to do that 1 minute at a time, Todd. I mean, come on. I'm not a masochist. So my co-host Bentley and I, we're sort of on a little break right now, but I have committed myself, when he's available, to do something about Speed 2. I wanted to do it in one whole episode because I feel like, you know, if you're going to take your medicine, you should take it all at once, but he wants to do it in like 10-minute chunks. So which is about the speed of the boat, I think, apparently, in that movie.
Yeah, sure.
So I've told him I will do the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes, and then he's on his own after that. I've never seen that movie.
Oh, really? I think I've only actually seen it once, you know, because I guess, you know, I mean, if there's a sequel to a movie I really, really like, I'm going to watch it, you know, regardless of the bad press that it's getting and things like that. But
yeah, I haven't seen Roadhouse 2 either. And I also have not seen, and I'm not sure how I feel about this upcoming remake. I guess I would say I'm concerned.
Well, I think rightfully so. I guess we'll find out. So when it comes to these movies by the minute podcasts and such, I mean, you've knocked out a couple different ones here. And I mean, I think with movies like Roadhouse and Speed, it's ones where you go, well, I mean, that's a no-brainer. Those are movies worthy of covering minute by minute. But I guess, do you have a certain outlook on that? Like, is there certain things that a movie must have in order to get the minute by minute treatment?
I mean, I think the most important thing, and, you know, far be it from me to suggest what a successful Movies by Minute podcast is, but I would say, having now done three movies like this, and I'm about to start my fourth, I think the most important thing is that you and your co-hosts have to really enjoy the movie because you're going to be with it for a long time. You have to be someone who's really kind of obsessively interested in the details of a movie. I mean, one of the interesting things that I've found now, so, you know, my wife Marcy and I did the movie White Christmas, 10 minutes at a time, not 1 minute at a time, but we did the whole movie. And I'm about to start doing The Fugitive. So, you know, by the time this comes out, well, we won't be out yet, but we'll probably start recording. I mean, I think one of the things that has surprised me is how much happens in a minute of movie. Like, when you watch a movie in 1 minute clips, it's surprising. You're like, wow, that's a lot that happened in that minute. Mm-hmm. I think if you force yourself to break it down and pay attention, there's a lot more movie, I think, in your movie than maybe you think there is at the time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've certainly experienced that. I've guested on some other podcasts that do the movies by the minute format. And, you know, a lot of times I think, what am I going to talk about, you know, for just a minute of film? And then I sit down and I watch it and I see all these different things in there. And, you know, plus a lot of times the hosts that I'm with, they're just drawing all this other stuff that just totally went right by me. And so it's wild how much you can find to talk about in just a minute of film.
I don't think I could have done the North Shore minute.
Maybe somebody could. Yes. Well, that sounds like a segue to me if there ever was one. Let's get to this movie we have today. As we said, it's called North Shore, released in 1987. Directed by a guy named William Phelps, who does not have a whole lot of credits. I really, looking through his IMDb page, this was his only feature film. He's done a few shorts. There's an episode listed there of the Weird Science TV series that was on, I think, the USA Network back in the 90s, I think. But other than those things, this is pretty much it. Now, I did see, though, that the IMDb page does list something that is in pre-production, which who knows how long it's been listed as being in pre-production, that is called North Shore Wave Warriors.
Hey, don't sleep on also Mainland to Oahu.
Yeah. I mean, regardless, it seems like this guy is certainly into surfing, which is the main topic for this film. Beyond the director credit, the more notable name behind the scenes on this film, who served as a producer and co-writer, is Randall Kleiser, who is probably most famous for directing Grease in 1978. But he also did some other notable films like The Blue Lagoon, Flight of the Navigator, and the, in my opinion, severely underrated Big Top Pee Wee. Now, this film, it focuses on a guy named Rick Kane, played by Matt Adler. He's a kid from Arizona who has just won a surfing contest, and he has his heart set on going to the North Shore of Hawaii to surf before he heads off to New York to attend art school. Now, Rick's surfing experience so far is confined to wave pools. I mean, after all, he's from Arizona. So he's got quite a bit to learn when he gets to Hawaii. Now, when he arrives there, things don't go well for him. The place where he was going to stay falls through, and then his stuff gets stolen by a gang of local surf ruffians called the Hui. And, you know, it's just not working out right away there. But he then does find a friend, a goofball who makes surfboards named Turtle, played by John Philbin. And this is where we should probably break away and explain a little bit. You know, when we talked about Daryl, yeah, one of the things that just stuck in my mind was that Daryl had a best buddy whose name was Turtle. And so when I watched this movie and suddenly I went, wait, did he just say his name was Turtle? Wait a second. This is another movie with a guy named Turtle. And it just so happens that when we talked about that movie, it was also with Roger. So I guess Roger is like that zombie kid who likes turtles YouTube.
I'm the turtle whisperer. Even though John Philbin is probably twice as old as the actor who plays Turtle in Daryl, I'm not sure. I've put them up next to each other. I'm not sure who is giving the more nuanced acting performance. Turtle is he's something, man. I did read in the very limited amount of background information about this movie, I did read that that John Philbin, like, he did some serious method preparation for this movie. He went there learned how to surf, learned his accent. So he was working hard to try to land the performance that we saw in this movie.
Well, yeah, it's I guess he could have gone farther, I guess, and actually tried to, you know, get into the mind of an actual turtle. But, you know, that's not what the role called for, I guess. Anyway, so back to our main guy, Rick, here. He eventually meets up with this guy that's somewhat of a soul surfer guru type of guy named Chandler, played by Gregory Harrison. He starts to teach Rick the true ways of surfing, helps him to mold his skills as well as his mind. And, of course, all the while, there's a bit of a love story going on because Rick is falling for the lovely Kiani, played by Nia Peeples, who happens to be the sister of the leader of that Hui gang that was causing him trouble earlier. Eventually, Rick's newfound skills put him in a prime position to compete in the Banzai Pipeline competition. But, of course, Chandler is very much against competitions and such, so this causes some tension. So, basically, it's the Karate Kid, but with surfing instead of the karate. But I'm going to let Roger get us started here. Give us a few of your thoughts on North Shore.
Wow, there's so many places we can go with this, Todd. I'm glad you mentioned the Karate Kid. I recognize that this doesn't make sense chronologically, but I did post on Facebook that I feel like this movie is the unholy offspring of The Karate Kid and Point Break.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of Karate Kid energy in the sense of, you know, if you plug in Chandler as our Mr. Miyagi character and this person who has to kind of learn how to surf. You haven't mentioned, you know, maybe one of the greatest parts of this movie, which is our antagonist, Lance Burkhart. Who is actually played by a legendary surfer named Laird Hamilton.
Yeah, there's several actual pro surfers in this film, which I wouldn't know because I know nothing about surfing. But kind of as I was looking it up and seeing the list of these guys that are actual pro surfers, I was like, oh, well, it's like how when in Police Academy 4, they had all that skateboarding sequence and they got all these people that are, you know, like Tony Hawk before he was famous and stuff like that.
You know, that's exactly where I was going to go. I cannot believe that you brought up Police Academy 4 because I was going to do that. But no,
Police Academy 4. Four is the best of the series. Come on.
I guess if you say so. No, and you know, the one thing I'll say about this movie, I think you can tell already that I don't have a huge high opinion of this movie, even though I was the one that picked it for you, so I apologize. The one thing I will say about this movie to its, I think, undying credit is that the surfing in this movie and the surfing photography in this movie is legitimately amazing. Mm-hmm. I actually think this is some of the best surfing footage that I've ever seen. And, you know, like I was talking to my wife, Marcy, tonight. I haven't watched, like, The Endless Summer. I don't watch a lot of surfing documentaries. Maybe these kinds of shots are just sort of run-of-the-mill things that you would be used to seeing. But they were not stuff that I was accustomed to. So, like, there's this one camera shot where you literally look down the entire length of, like, a tube. And I think that's great. And yeah, as you mentioned, there are a lot of famous surfers in this movie, some of them playing themselves, some of them just sort of playing random dudes. So like the two people that rescue Rick after he has his sort of showgirls moment where he comes to town and all his stuff gets stolen and he's stranded with nothing.
The showgirls moment. I love that.
Those two guys are, I think one of them is nicknamed Aki and the other one is Alex. Those are surfers. And there are tons of other surfers. Apparently the guy who plays the color commentator during the Banzai whatever?
Banzai Pipeline, yeah, something like that.
The guy who plays the color commentator is this surfer named Corky Carroll, who is reportedly, you know, if Wikipedia is correct, which it always is really a legend because he was basically the first professional surfer who could sort of make a career out of just surfing. And he's great. Mm. I really enjoyed that whole tournament scene, and I enjoyed the commentary. I think it made it very enjoyable for me. But wow, there are a lot of different directions where we could go here. Where would you like to go, Todd?
Well, let me start by saying that I think my opinion of the film is going to be a bit higher than yours. I admit it's no great shakes, but I was surprised that I liked it a bit more than I thought I would. You know, it's not a great movie, but for most of it, I was kind of, you know, engaged and interested in what was going on. I do think the movie starts pretty rough. It's kind of just, I don't know, it feels really choppy in the beginning, where there's just, you know, we go right from this surf competition, which, you know, rolls over the opening credits, where it's very clear. I mean, they try to hide that it's a wave pool, but you can tell right away. You're going, that water is too clear. That is a wave pool that they're in. And, you know, eventually you get just the idea of this guy, Rick, and he, you know, he's won this competition. And then he has this scene with his mother, which is just awkward. You know, it's the cliched, oh, I want to go do this weird thing. But mom's saying, what about school? What about school? You know, and, you know, all that. And then he gets to Hawaii and there's just one thing after another that just happens, and it all feels a little disjointed and weird. So at the beginning of the film, I was just really feeling disconnected and it wasn't working for me. And there was weird stuff going on. I didn't understand, like, this whole bit about driving through burning cane fields.
Yes. We have to talk about this scene. There's a scene after when he gets picked up by these two dudes that I just mentioned. It's like some fraternity initiation ritual. They take him to this field of burning sugarcane, and he has to, like, steal some, which is how he gets crossways the first time with this Hui gang. Or maybe it's other people that are just mad at him. I can't even tell anymore.
Yeah.
But, like, I watched that scene, and I was like, whoa, this is a really different movie now. Like, at that point, I really had no idea what was going to happen. It was very...
Well, and the two surfer guys were telling him, like, oh, yeah, it's this initiation. Everybody has to do this. I wasn't convinced of that. I was like, is this really an initiation? Or are they just kind of trying to off him? You know, it's like, I guess you could dump a guy in a burning cane field and nobody would know about it. I don't know. But yeah, it was weird. And that was one of those things where I was just like, there's a bunch of different things just coming at me. And I'm not making sense of it. He's at a bar. He's at a party. He's in this burning cane field. It wasn't making sense to me. And plus, what was really throwing me, and, you know, I'll sound like a total idiot here, but I was really having a hard time following things in these sequences, because these two guys that he meets up with are not Hawaiian. They're Australian, and their accents are really, really heavy. And I was like, is this another one of those moments where I'm going to have to turn on the subtitles to understand what people are saying in English? Because it just was not gelling in my mind. I was having a really hard time understanding them.
Well, to this movie's credit, the North Shore of Hawaii is a real thing. Like, if you want to go surfing and catch some of the biggest waves, the North Shore is a place where you would want to go.
And people are coming from all over the world there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, this is definitely where this has got to be where Bellows Beach is. This is where Bodhi wants to come to catch the 50-year wave at the end of Point Break. this is where you should go. And, you know, for all I know, this, you know, they probably filmed most of these scenes on location. I'm pretty sure that they did. Well, one thing I do want to mention that I enjoyed so much about the beginning of this movie, since you brought it up, I agree with you. I feel like the beginning of this movie is a little rough. I think probably right as soon as Chandler sort of decides that he's going to take Rick under his wing, I feel like the movie really shifts gears, and then it kind of, I think you're right, it develops a little bit more cohesion. But before we get to that, I just want to mention one of my favorite things about the beginning of this movie is how in every scene Rick feels the need to walk around with his surfboard. I mean, it's fair, it's literally the only possession he has left, but it's like everywhere he goes into a bar with a surfboard, he goes to a party with a surfboard, he walks up and down the street with a surfboard. It's like, just in case you forgot that he's a surfboard, he has to walk around with his surfboard. And I swear to God, it looks exactly like the surfboard that Keanu Reeves buys in Point Break. It's a bad surfboard, it's hot pink. And I would bet that Kathryn Bigelow took some notes from this movie when she decided to make Point Break.
Well, and I don't know, I mean, the ins and outs of surfboards, obviously. I mean, I've spent my whole life living in the parts of the country where there are no oceans. I mean, you know, I grew up in Chicago. We have a big body of water there, Lake Michigan, but you don't Surf Lake, Michigan. So I don't know if he's got a good surfboard or a bad surfboard or whatever. But I did find it interesting. I mean, one thing I got to respect this movie for is it does take the time to explain some of these things so that those of us who are clueless when it comes to surfing do have somewhat of an understanding of how things work. And he comes in with this surfboard. Everyone tells him it's bad. And as things progress, we see different surfboards. In fact, his whole training thing, you know, when we start to get into the whole Miyagi type relationship here, one of the things that Chandler has him do is he has to work his way through mastering a bunch of different surfboards. And I thought that stuff was pretty interesting, especially like on the first one, he gives him this massive one that weighs 130 pounds.
Both Rose and Jack would have fit on this surfboard.
Yeah. And he gets on it and he says something about, well, it has no fin. How am I supposed to steer it? And of course, the first thing going through my mind was, oh, okay, I get that makes sense. That's why there's a little fin on the bottom of the surfboards. You know, I don't know. But then, you know, it's like, okay, so there's no fin. How do I steer this? And Chandler says, well, you use your outside foot. That's what the ancient Hawaiians did. And I'm thinking about it going, okay, I'm understanding here. And they have the sequence. You see him surfing and all that and do that stuff. And I was like, you know, it's not like I'm ever going to go out there and use that knowledge myself, obviously, but I was like, I feel a little smarter about surfing right now.
I think this movie really has a lot of love and respect for surfing, and I think that comes through. Again, I think the surfing in this movie is tremendous. You know, it's fair. I mean, like, if you're going to cast a lot of surfers to make a movie with amazing surfing in it, you know, you probably shouldn't necessarily expect that they're going to put together an Oscar reel full of acting performances. I will say, I think Matt Adler, who plays Rick, he does a really good job surfing. And my understanding is that he and, you know, the other main non-surfer actors did a lot of their own surfing in this movie, mm-hmm. and it looks pretty good.
Yeah, there's several shots where you can tell it's him because the camera gets pretty close and you're going, wow, that's either the best mask I've ever seen in my life or that's really him.
So, no, the best mask in this movie is that really strange one that Turtle wears at the beginning. That scene was
yes,
disturbing.
It was, oh, because he's got this alien type mask, almost looks a little like a turtle face type of thing. But yeah, and the way Turtle was, like, you know, moving his head and looking around, it has had this whole alien feel to it. That was disturbing.
Should we talk a little bit about our man Lance Berkman?
Yes,
or Burkhart, Lance Burkhart, played by Laird Hamilton. He's a cartoon villain. He's a little bit like Johnny Lawrence in The Karate Kid, so you could make that comparison there. He's really tall.
Yeah.
There's a shot towards the end of this movie because, you know, this movie obviously wants to play up. There's this final huge confrontation that I hope we'll get to talk about, you know, in the last round between Rick and Lance. But in the scene leading up to the final, I guess, heat, you know, in the final round of the competition, you see Rick Adler walk out to get ready to surf with Lance Burkhart. And I promise you, with Laird Hamilton, like, Laird Hamilton is a foot taller than Rick Adler. He is massive.
Oh, absolutely. Well, several of these guys, I would say, are all quite a bit bigger than Matt Adler is. As a matter of fact, there were times where I thought, was part of what won him the role here was that he is kind of a small guy and looks, I mean, forgive me, a little geeky, a little awkward, you know. I mean, actually, as I was watching the film and seeing Matt Adler there, I'm going, I know this guy from something, and I couldn't place it. And it was probably, I don't know, half hour or so into the movie, it finally hit me that he is in one of the segments of Amazon Women on the Moon. And it's one where he plays this kind of awkward teen who is out on a date with his girlfriend, played by Kelly Preston. And things are getting hot and heavy. And she's like, well, let's go to the drugstore and get some condoms. And he's, you know, awkwardly going in there to buy condoms. And then it turns out he's like the billionth customer of the condom company. And like a marching band comes in and reporters and this whole thing. And, you know, all he wanted to do was buy a box of condoms. And so, you know, I've always kind of thought of him as, you know, that awkward teen type part. And in this film, yeah, number one, he is not at all impressive size wise compared to the other surfers. But he does also have this kind of awkwardness just of the character in general. I mean, he's a little clueless when it comes to stuff. He's got the basics of surfing. He knows how to surf, but he doesn't know the ins and outs of it to master it in Hawaii.
He kind of looks like someone who should be going to art school.
Yeah, which is what he's
which is
going
where
to
he's
do.
Going to end up.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The only things I know about Matt Adler is that he's married to Laura San Giacomo, so good job marrying up. And apparently he's really good friends with George Clooney.
Oh, okay. Well, let's jump over to Gregory Harrison there for a second.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Again, you know, I mean, you said you didn't recognize too many people in this film, if any. This was another case where I was going, I recognize him. Why do I recognize him? He played the part of Gonzo, was the name they referred to him as, on Trapper John M.D. back in the late 70s, early 80s, which I never really watched the show much. I was a kid. It wasn't my type of show. But I was like, okay, I remember him from that. I dug what he was doing in this film, though. I mean, you know, we've compared it to Mr. Miyagi. It's you know, that type of a dynamic between him and Rick. But it's a very different character. You know, I mean, this is a younger guy, of course. You know, this is a guy who just kind of looks like he kind of checked out a little bit. You know, like he you know, maybe it was from the mainland. He went to Hawaii and just checked out there, you know, married a local woman's got kids and all that stuff. But his love is really out there on the ocean. And, you know, I thought there were some nice moments between him and Rick as he's kind of, you know, giving him all his knowledge and maybe, you know, trying to, I don't know, make it so that Rick can achieve the things that he can't do himself as much anymore because he's older, because he's tied down by a family, things like that.
I thought Gregory Harrison was great. I wrote down in my notes, you know, as I sort of was chronicling what I saw in this movie, like he's the first person in this movie that seemed to really kind of to know how to put together an acting performance. And I thought his performance in this movie was really great. And I think he has good chemistry with Matt Adler. I enjoyed the basic kind of spiritual conflict that this movie was setting up, which is essentially like, you know, are you surfing for the right reasons? And, you know, mm-hmm. Chandler is the one who's trying to explain to us that, you know, you need to surf because you love to surf, not because you're a mercenary like Lance and you just want to win contests and get famous and, you know, make a lot of money. And that's, you know, that's kind of like, that's the spiritual journey that Rick has to go through throughout the course of this movie. So I think they do well together, and I would say I enjoy all the scenes in this movie that he's in. Although, you know, what did you think? And if you don't want to jump this far ahead right now, that's fine. You know, in the end, I'm assuming we can spoil North Shore.
Oh, absolutely.
Great. Okay,
we spoil movies all the time here.
In the end, it turns out that Lance is a big dirty cheater, and he can't win, honestly, so he has to wreck Rick. And when they both get back to shore, like, Chandler is irate, and he wants to call the marshals, and he wants to, you know, get – and it's Rick who has to say to him, like, look, dude, this doesn't matter anymore. Like, what did you think of that? Because in a sense, that's a real, like, that's a real weird character shift for Chandler, that he should actually care about who wins this contest.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I don't know. I mean, I kind of struggled a little bit just with Chandler's not being in favor of competitions at all mindset, because all right, I get it. You know, it's like, all right, you want to surf just for the love of surfing and, you know, all that. Okay, whatever. But you still got to put food on the table. You know, not everybody can mold a surfboard like you can, you know, and all that kind of stuff. You got to do something to make money. And it seems to me like a competition is a good way to do that. So the fact that he was just totally against it or whatever, I was kind of like, I don't know if that's really realistic. So then, yeah, to have that shift come later on where he is just livid about it when this cheating incident happens, and then Rick is the total opposite. I mean, it's literally like the two of them switched roles for that moment. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, I don't know how much I believe it, but it plays well on screen, I guess, you know?
I mean, it's the payoff for the whole journey we've been through with Rick. And I guess, you know, this is where we realize that Rick is he's not going over to the dark side, and he cares about the right things. And that's why, I mean, you know, again, I think this movie surprised me a little bit. Like, if I had turned off the movie after the first 10 minutes, we're like, wow, that would have been rough. But and you had made me guess what was going to happen, I would have said, well, he's going to have a hard time, but he's ultimately going to come through in the end, and he's going to fall in love with this lovely Hawaiian woman, and they're going to live in Hawaii. Everything's going to live, you know, everything's going to end happily ever after. No, that's not how this movie ends. He gets on a plane and leaves without her. And, you know, it's a little surprising. I give this movie enough credit to say it's not entirely the cookie cutter sports movie that you think it might be.
Well, that sounds to me like we should talk a little bit about the love story aspect of the film.
Okay. I don't know if you've already mentioned this. I apologize if you have. Apparently, the actress who played, I think it's Kiani.
Kiani, yes.
She was a recast.
Yes.
Is what I heard. I don't know who she was cast for, but what did you think about it? Maybe I should throw back to you.
Well, yeah, I saw that information too, and it was odd because all the stuff I found on that was very vague about what information it had. You know, I never was able to find, well, who was the actress that was originally cast? Why did they let her go? You know, et cetera, et cetera. It sounds like they shot quite a bit of the film with this other actress and then had to redo everything with Nia Peoples. The only explanation I found is basically they said the original actress didn't work.
Yeah, this is an Eric Stoltz type situation. Maybe she just wanted to take this movie into a way darker place.
Yeah. I suppose in the Flash's universe, this original actress is the star of North Shore and not Nia Peoples. That's a reference if you haven't seen The Flash yet.
I haven't yet. I haven't seen the new one.
But yeah, actually, I think that there are scenes that ended up on a DVD or a Blu-ray release of this film of the original actress. I actually found one on YouTube and watched it. It's actually the ending scene where they're, you know, kind of saying their goodbyes and stuff. And I was kind of like, okay, I can see a bit of the awkwardness here. I get, you know, if that scene is meant to represent where they were having some issues, I kind of get it. And, you know, Nia Peoples, I mean, when I saw she was in this movie, I always think of Nia Peoples as being like somebody who is like famous for being famous and like just kind of shows up in these things. Like I remember, oh, okay, she like hosted some TV shows. I know she had a couple of albums. She's, you know, been in a handful of movies, things like that. I mean, when you look at the poster for this, she's the prominent image, you know, the biggest face that you see on the poster is hers. And, you know, watching it, I'm like, okay, she's not wowing me as an actress here, but there is a charm. I get that. But ultimately, I think maybe the biggest problem is that there's not that much to the love story. I mean, you know, she meets him early on and they kind of both fall for each other pretty quickly without really giving each other much reason to fall for each other. And then she kind of vanishes for a good part of the film and then comes back towards the end. So I was kind of like,
that is true. There's something sort of choppy about this love story in the sense that once we get into sort of our training montage, she disappears for like a half an hour and then just suddenly comes back for no reason. You didn't mention this movie has one of the more ghoulish meet cutes I've ever seen. Like, I have a hard time watching people get injured in movies. And especially like the way this happens, where essentially he wipes out the first time he goes surfing and his back gets shredded by a coral reef, which is as gross as that sounds. And so like their first scene together is like her putting aloe on his back, which is looks like it's been brutalized, and it's like, oh, this is that like the opposite of romantic for me. and then she disappears, and then she comes back. She's almost like there to amp up the locals versus Huli conflict that they talk a lot about in this movie, because like you said, she's related to the leader of this surfing gang that initially is sort of trying to run him out of town.
But even that doesn't really develop much because, no. I mean, at first you kind of get the idea that they're going to be the bad guys. You know, they're Cobra Kai in this movie. And they are kind of at the beginning, but then as things progress, they kind of seem more accepting of Rick, and it's these pro surfers that are the ones that are the problem. And there was a part of me that kind of wanted to see the Hui gang continue to be a thorn in Rick's side. I thought they were more interesting than the pretty boy surfers were.
Well, don't forget that fantastic fight scene where Rick has to have a mano-a-mano fight with the guy who stole all his stuff. Uh-huh. And that's what ultimately helps him earn the respect of the Hui gang, because they have this sort of very sloppy fight in the mud. And then then he gets his belt buckle back.
Yes. Which that whole thing blew me away. I didn't mention that at the beginning, but I was like, is giving a prize belt buckle – you know, a thing in surfing competitions? I know it is in rodeos, but I was like, oh, okay, a surfing belt buckle.
Well, he also gets a giant oversized check for $500.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most of the time surfers don't even wear pants that would require a belt, you know? I don't know. Anyway.
I will say, you know, since we sort of mentioned something related to this, I think ultimately this is a good idea for a movie. And I think probably in the hands of a capable director who had not only directed this, I think, like, this is a movie that I feel like could be primed to be remade. And maybe it has under some other name that I'm just not familiar with. But, like, it has all the bones of a good story, just not necessarily executed in a particularly good way. And one thing in particular that I will just call attention to from a filmmaking standpoint, this movie makes maybe the most extensive and laziest use of ADR I have ever seen. There are so many scenes in this movie where, like, there's just like an extra five lines of dialogue being said by no one, like just sort of while something else is happening, I guess to kind of fill you in on something else that you needed to know at that point. But like, come on, do better.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's a film that I think the people making it, I mean, again, I don't know much about this director, but the impression I've gotten from looking at this film, looking at some other things he's worked on, the guy certainly has an interest in surfing. And the things that this film really excels at, I think, is capturing the surfing. And like you say, those great shots of just the surfing action, and you know, as I said, there's various moments where they kind of help us understand some of the things about how surfing works and how you do this and how you do that. You know, that stuff I think is done very well. It's done with care. It works out well. It's just all the other stuff to actually make it a rounded story, you know, that kind of isn't done as well. And that may have to do with the fact that the people at the helm of this were more interested in the surfing stuff than they were the dramatic stuff. And, you know, I get that. That's fine. That happens sometimes. One thing, too, I wanted to mention, I totally forgot about. I was thinking about that, the surfing footage and just the way that it portrays things there. I enjoyed, there was a moment where Rook's star is on the rise, and he catches the eye of this photographer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who often hangs out on the beach and is taking pictures that go in surf magazines and stuff. And so the photographer sets things up so he can get a bunch of pictures of Rick. And I was really intrigued, and maybe part of this is because I myself have an interest in photography, that they show how they capture some of this stuff. And you see the photographer going out there into the ocean, and he's, I mean, up to his neck in the waves, and he's got this waterproof camera, and he's really close to where Rick is, just zooming by with his surfboard, you know, dangerously close at times, and capturing these images. I was going, that's really cool seeing how they're capturing that. And then, of course, I got to mention about the photographer, that he's played by John Paragon, who I will always remember as Jombi the Genie from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
I'm so he's glad a guy you mentioned that. We've come back to Pee-wee. Like, the circle is complete.
He worked with Paul Rubens a lot, and, you know, kind of that troupe of performers that, like, Phil Hartman was a part of and stuff like that. And so, yeah, he will forever be Jombi.
Your wish is granted. Long live Jambi.
Well, before we move on to the break here, I guess I'll give you a chance. Any closing thoughts you have on
I will just
on
mention,
this.
Too, yeah, I think we've hit most of the things in my notes in a relatively random fashion, as I think befits the movie. The one thing I want to mention, too, that we haven't talked about is the soundtrack. Somewhere out there, possibly, maybe one could obtain the original motion picture soundtrack to North Shore. Because let me tell you, there's a lot of songs in this movie, and they're fantastic. it does remind me a little bit, and I promise this will be my last Point Break reference of the night, but there's
it's never a problem to reference Point Break.
There are a lot of really random songs in this movie that often seem to have sort of like their title or their lyrics are just like really on the nose. But the names of the band, it's like I was never a pseudo Echo fan before I started watching this movie. I'm not sure that I am now, but that's a pretty amazing band. The Angels, the Wailing Souls, like the music in this movie is something. Let me tell you.
I remember Pseudo Echo. In fact, that was the one that when one of their tracks came on in this film, because they have several, I think, in this film. But their version of Funky Town shows up in this movie.
No, it's so bad.
And, you know, I mean, I remember that playing in the radio back in the late 80s. You know, that was a minor hit back in the day. So I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that one.
The best song off the soundtrack, as befits movies of this time, has got to be the one at the end, because there's always got to be the climactic song. It's called The North Shore Roar, performed by Zoo Drive. It's tremendous. Other than that, you know, I'm glad I watched it, because I think it gave us a fun movie to talk about. Like I said, I would love to see this movie again. And if anybody out there knows a movie that's like this, I would be up for that too.
Yeah, I had fun with it. Like I said at the beginning, it's not a movie I'm going to sit here and say is fantastic. I think there's a lot about it that, you know, you can be interested in. I think the real appeal here is the surfing footage and kind of the knowledge that it offers about surfing, the dramatic stuff, the love story, not as effective, but you know, for this guy that grew up in the plains and now lives in the mountains, nowhere close to an ocean. I enjoyed watching the surfing footage here. It was a lot of fun. All right, well, let's take a quick break here. We'll hear from another LAM Podcasting Network show, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
In a world where podcasts already seem to address every imaginable subject, one man broke new ground with a seemingly random obsession about exploding helicopters in movies. He was a podcaster on the edge, a maverick broadcaster who played by his own rules. Now, he has a last chance to talk about the strange way helicopters explode in film. Exploding Helicopter, available on iTunes and Podomatic now. Think you know about chopper fireballs? Think again.
Hi everybody, this is Todd. Just a quick reminder that you can now help support the Forgotten Filmcast through Patreon. For just a few little old dollars a month, you can support this show and earn access to some bonus features. Visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more.
Hi, I'm Chili Dilly, the personality pickle. Packed in a jar for the freshest flavor. Served cold in a sack for you to savor. So dainty to eat, no muss, no fuss. An ideal snack for all of us. Crisp, tender, and tasty with a bit of spice. Buy one now. Taste how nice. Snack bar clerks will knock themselves silly, speeding your order for a real Chili Dilly.
All right, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is the part of the show where each of us gets to talk a bit about another movie that we've enjoyed, something we want everyone to check out for themselves. It might be a forgotten film, might be an old classic, might be something new in the theaters. The possibilities are endless. So, Roger, what is your recommendation?
Well, thank you for asking. I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to do like – this is like three steps removed from North Shore, and so I'll explain. When I saw Gregory Harrison come on the screen and, frankly, kind of rescue the movie, he reminds me a lot of an actor I don't know if you've ever heard of named Dennis Boutsakaris, who I think is well known for being on the TV show. I think he was on 30 something maybe. And he's been in a bunch of other movies. He does a lot of audiobooks and he's great. And so I was like, oh, it kind of reminds me of that guy. And so I'm actually going to recommend a movie with Dennis Boutsakaris in it called Batteries Not Included. Have you ever seen this movie?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So this is a movie. I think it's a very cute movie. It's about this group of people that lives in this building in New York City. And for no apparent reason, they are eventually visited by like the world's smallest alien/UFOs. You can't really tell what they are. And hijinks and hilarity ensue. But it's actually I think this movie has a lot of heart. And there are legitimately parts of this movie that kind of make me cry. I think there's some parts of this movie that really kind of tug at your heartstrings. It's got an amazing performance by both Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronyn, mm-hmm. who of course are married. And it's got some other really standout performances in it as well. I didn't realize until I was kind of getting ready for the podcast. It's the screenwriting debut of Brad Bird, who of course went on to much bigger and better things with Pixar and with lots of other things. But I think it's a good movie. I read that it was sort of championed by Steven Spielberg, which kind of makes sense. I can see him being interested in a story like this. And I would encourage you all to go see it.
Yeah, I think Spielberg was an executive producer on it. I want to say it came from, it was an Amblin production.
That's right.
And I remember going to see this in the theater, actually, when it came out. I remember it was like a Christmas time release. And I mean, back then, me and my buddies, if Spielberg's name was on it, we went and saw it, and that was at the time where Spielberg was, lending his name to a lot of films where he was the producer, from like Back to the Future to Gremlins, Young Sherlock Holmes, all those type of things. So Batteries Not Included was another one. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but it's a very sweet movie. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The cast is definitely one of the highlights here. And, Hume Cronyn and Jessica Tandy were coming right off of Cocoon when they made this. And in some ways what they're doing here is a little similar to Cocoon, but they're great. I love Frank McCray in this one. He plays the big silent guy, in the house, who's always trying to fix the tiles in the entryway. Elizabeth Pena in this is great. And I always remember, I don't want to call him the bad guy because he's not really the bad guy. He's kind of a bad guy in the beginning, but he becomes a nice guy as it goes on. But Carlos, played by Michael Carmine, is kind of like this gang leader type of guy who's been hired to harass the people in this building so that a developer can tear it down, et cetera, et cetera. He's great in this movie too. Yeah, it's a fun one. I need to revisit it.
He's great. There's a heart-wrenching scene with him and Jessica Tandy that I don't want to spoil because her character, like a big part of the end of this movie kind of revolves around that. But there's a scene sort of right towards the end, some bad stuff happens. But there's a scene where one of the little tiny robots, aliens, I'm still not exactly sure what they are, kind of comes back and it like tries to start to fix one of the tiles after, the very bad thing happened. Mm-hmm. And like every time I see that scene, I just break down. It's like, it's so heart-wrenching. I tried watching this with my kids and I would say like, if you think this is a children's movie, it's kind of not. Like it's really sweet, but I would say it takes a while getting going. But I think if you stay with it, you'll be rewarded.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, the film that I'm going to recommend, I decided to go with another surfing movie. And this is one that I watched a few years ago because I was going to be on a podcast where we were talking about the films of John Milius. And so I needed to watch all the things that he had both written and directed. And one that I had, I don't think even ever heard of before that, is a film from 1978 called Big Wednesday. And it's about these three buddies in Southern California who are surfers. And it's kind of a coming of age story. It takes place in the mid 60s. It stars Jan Michael Vincent, William Catt, and Gary Busey, speaking of Point Break. Okay. And all three of them are great in this as these three guys. And, you know, it's kind of about, I mean, it's not just about surfing. It's about kind of the you know, going from being a teenager and, you know, you go out and have fun with your buddies every weekend and you go down to the beach and go surfing and all that. Is about moving from that then into adulthood and dealing with things like marriage and responsibilities. And, you know, this, and it takes place, like I say, in the mid 60s. So they're dealing with the Vietnam era and being drafted and all that. In fact, one scene that stands out, I remember from this, is where they're basically trying to fake illnesses, fake medical issues, so they will be rejected by the military when they get called to, you know, because of being drafted. And I mean, beyond the three leads that I mentioned, there's a bunch of other great side players in this film. You've got folks like Sam Melville, Robert Englund, pre-Freddy Krueger, is in this film. Joe Spinell is in this, Reb Brown. Just a great cast. Much like North Shore, though, the highlight is the surfing. There are some amazing surfing sequences. In fact, you know, we talked about saying we weren't sure how North Shore ranks when it comes to, you know, capturing surfing, but we were both impressed by it. Well, I would say Big Wednesday is the film that captures surfing the best that I have ever seen. There's some amazing stuff that they do in this film. It's clear that this is something that John Milius was very passionate about. He, I guess, was into surfing himself, and that comes through loud and clear in this film. You know, when I look at Milius's career and other films he's directed, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I love Conan the Barbarian, but I think I might actually say Big Wednesday is his best.
Yeah, I've not heard of this movie before, although now that you're bringing it up and I'm looking it up, there's a fascinating piece of trivia about this movie about George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. Are you aware of this?
I'm not sure.
Oh, can I share this on your behalf then?
Oh, absolutely.
According to the internet, apparently John Milius and George Lucas and Steven Spielberg were best buds. And according to the internet, the three of them agreed to exchange a percentage point of Big Wednesday, Star Wars, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Let's figure out who came out the best out of that exchange.
Yes.
That's like cashing in a winning lottery ticket that you didn't even have to work for.
No kidding.
That's fantastic.
Awesome. Awesome.
There's a quote here. It says here that Steven Spielberg was sure that this movie was going to be a big hit, that it was a cross between American Graffiti and Jaws.
That's pretty wild. Well, Roger, I want to thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go here, please remind everybody of where they can find you and your various podcast projects.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah, so you can find several of my podcasts already on the internet. Of course, there's Roadhouse Minute, where it all began. And if you're in more of a holiday mood, you can try the 12 Days of White Christmas. You could listen to Speed Movie Minute with my friend Bentley Michaels and me. And hopefully, you know, sometime in the not-too-distant future, you'll be able to hear my upcoming project, which is the One-Armed Minute, where we will go through the movie The Fugitive 1 minute at a time. I'm very much looking forward to that. And I have various other guest appearances on other podcasts like the Lambcast, where you and I were on together last time. So I'm out there. You can go look up those podcasts where all good podcasts can be found.
Awesome. Thanks again for being on the show, and I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
Thank you, Todd.
Well, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of the show. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to read more reviews of Forgotten Films, you can find them over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films at Facebook. I welcome your questions, comments, and feedback about the show, so please email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast, where you can learn all about how you can help support this show. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, go watch some old movies. We'll see you again real soon.
Alright, that was a hot wave.
That wasn't a wave, that was a ripple.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.